The air was cool when they rode out of the valley, heading for Utah. But spring was in the air, evident in the leafing trees and the flowers that grew wild color in the valley. Nicole sat her little mare. Smoke rode 7.
How dangerous is this trip? Yeah,
we might go there and back without seeing an Indian. Yeah, we might be ambushed 10 miles from the cabin. And no way to answer that question. I don't know much about Utah Territory. So we'll be seeing it for the first time, together.
They camped on the third night just north of the Hovenweep, near Keeley Canyon. They had seen a few Indians on the third day. That was the first one since leaving the valley. They were Weminuche Ute. But they didn't bother the man and woman. They only watched through obsidian eyes, faces impassive. They were armed with ancient rifles, bows and arrows, and perhaps they didn't want to risk a fight against the many-shoot rifles of the man and woman. Perhaps they didn't feel hostile that day. Perhaps they were hunting and didn't want to take the time for an attack. With an Injun, one never knew. Just like Preacher always insisted, Injuns was notional. On the fifth day, Smoke figured they were in Utah territory. Probably had been all day, and the settlement of Mormons should be in sight. But all they found were rotten, tumble-down cabins and no sign of life.
Preacher said they were here in 55. Wonder where they went.
Honey, that's 16 years ago.
Nicole's eyes swept the land, spotting an old weed-filled graveyard.
Let's look over there.
The last faded date on a rotten head marker was 14 years old. In the largest building of more than a dozen cabins, they found a rusted tin box and pried open the lid. They found rotting papers that crumbled at the touch. Smoke took Nicole out into the sunlight.
I know what I'll do.
Smoke took a small hammer and a nail from the side pack of his pack horse, which he carried in case an animal threw a shoe. He built a fire and spent an hour heating and hammering the nail into a crude ring. When it cooled, he slipped it on her third finger, left hand.
It'll have to do. Close as I can make us to being really married.
Nicole smiled and kissed him.
Let's go home.
Preacher was sitting on the rough bench in front of the cabin when they rode into the yard. He was whittling on a piece of wood.
Howdy! Where the hell you two youngins been?
Well now, we might ask you the same question.
I've been rambling, seeing God's country in all its glory.
We got married.
Nicole showed Preacher her nail ring.
Right nice. You with child, girl?
Yes, sir.
I figured y'all get into mischief whilst I was gone. That ain't no big deal. I helped birth dozens of papooses in my time. Woman does all the work, man just gets in the way. Who spoke the words?
Nobody. Couldn't find a minister. Went all the way into Utah territory looking.
Well, I always believed it was what was in your hearts that counted. Yeah, Smoke. I know you was in love and I seen you fall off your horse.
I didn't fall off my horse.
You did too.
Did not.
I'll go fix supper.
Come sit down, Smoke. I gotta talk to you.
What about the horses?
Well, they ain't gonna go nowhere. Come on, come sit. It's a good thing you didn't ride east, boy. There's warrants out for you all over the place. Even got them with your picture on them at the Springs and at Walsenburg. Don't ride no further east than the Los Pinos, you hear?
Smoke looked at Preacher, then opened his mouth to protest.
You married now, son. You got responsibilities to that there woman who's carrying your child. And you got men hunting you. Out there, Potter and Richards, among others. Prices on your head, too. Big money. Guess I'm afraid of you, boy, or something like it.
What'd you hear about Potter and Stratton and Richards?
They all up in Idaho territory, up in the wild country. And they all live in or around a town called Berry.
Berry like a strawberry?
No, berry like you plant somebody in the ground. Way I got the story, Smoke, your pa rode into that there town like a wild man, reins between his teeth, both hands full of colts. He killed 3 or 4, wounded 2 or 3 more. Took a right smart amount of gold them men took from the Rebs. Way I heard it, no one knowed him up there in Berry. So he hung around for a week or two before he made his move, listening until he learned where the gold was.
I wonder what he did with the gold.
Why, you interested in it?
Not in the least.
I hoped you'd say that.
If they leave me alone, I'll leave them alone.
That ain't gonna work that way, boy.
What do you mean?
You got bounty hunters sniffing your back trail. He's at least $3,000 on your head, dead or alive. All of it put there by them three men up in the territory. That's big money, boy. Big money. That's why I come back so soon. You need to have somebody watching your back.
Don't these bounty hunters know the truth about me? About what happened to Pa and Luke?
They don't care, son. They after the money, and to hell with how they earn it. Most bounty hunters is scum. I'd shoot a bounty hunter on sight and take his hair, too.
We're going to raise horses here, Preacher. Run some cattle directly. You and me and Nicole. We're going to raise a family. And our children will need a grandfather. And that's you. You old goat.
Well, thank you. Now, that's the nicest thing you've said to me in months.
Haven't seen you in months.
Oh, that's right. That's the nicest thing you've said to me in years, then. Anywho, you keep them guns of yours loosened. When's the girl going to give birth?
November, she's guessing.
Guessing, huh? Just like a woman. Don't never know nothing for sure.
The summer passed uneventfully, with Smoke tending to his huge gardens and looking after his growing herd of horses. Preacher hunted for game, curing some of the meat and making pemmican out of the rest. In the first week of July, much to Preacher's disgust, Nicole sent him off to the nearest town.
Well, now what in the hell is a cannon jug?
Jar. Cannon jar. They have screw-down, airtight lids. They keep food fresh and good-tasting for months.
Well, I'll be damned.
Probably. And don't forget the lids and the vinegar. And you come right back now, Preacher. No dilly-dallying around, you hear?
Oh, yes, ma'am. And don't forget the lids. I sure hope none of my compadres see me doing this. I'll never live it down. I fought two damn grizzlies in my time. Now I'm running errands to get jug lids. Ain't nobody got no respect for an old man.
The nearest town of any size other than the Springs, and Preacher couldn't go there, too many people knew him and might try to track him back to Smoke, was Del Norte, located just a few miles south of the Rio Grande, on the eastern slopes of the San Juan Forest. He knew of a town being built at the site of old Antoine Robidoux's trading post up close to the Gunnison, but he doubted they would have any cannon jars and lids there, so he pointed his pony's nose east-northeast to avoid settlements as much as possible. He rode through the western part of the San Juans, crossed the Los Pinos, through the Weminuche, then followed the Rio Grande into Del Norte, a long bit of traveling through the wilderness. The Preacher knew all the shortcuts and places to avoid. As Preacher rode into town, coming in from the opposite direction deliberately, his eyes swept the street from side to side, settling on a group of men in front of a local saloon. Most were local men, but Preacher spotted two as gun hands. He knew one of them, Felter, an ex-army sergeant who had been publicly flogged and dishonorably discharged for desertion in the face of the enemy. The enemy being the Cheyenne up in the north part of the state. But Preacher knew the man was no coward. He just showed uncommon good sense in getting away from a bad situation. After his humiliation and discharge from the army, Felter had turned bounty hunter, selling his gun skills, which were considerable, to the highest bidder. He was an ugly brute of a man who had killed, so it was said, more than 20 men. He was quick on the draw. Not as quick as Smoke, Preacher knew. Nobody he had ever seen or heard of was that quick. He cut his eyes once more to Felter. The man had been accused of rape twice. The other man standing beside Felter looked like Canning, the outlaw. The Preacher wasn't sure of that. If it was Canning and he was riding with Felter, then they were up to no good. And that was a fact. In the general store, Preacher sized up the shopkeeper as one of those pinched-mouthed eastern types. Looked like he might be henpecked, too. Preacher bought a little bit of ribbon for Nicole to wear in her hair and some pretty gingham for a new dress. She was swelling up like a pumpkin.
You got any cannon jars?
Just got a shipment of those new type with a screw top. Best around.
Yeah, well, can you pack them for travel over some rough country heading east?
I can.
Preacher ordered several cases and paid for them.
Good, good. Just put them out back and I'll pick them up later on.
Don't mind my asking. What's a mounted man like you going to do with canning jars?
preacher wasn't about to reveal that he lived with Smoke and Nicole.
Oh, well, my old woman about worried me plumb to death. She's up to her butt in green beans. You know what I mean? I never should have got hitched up.
Sir, I know exactly what you mean. By all that is holy, I do.
Walter, you hurry up now and bring me my tea. Stop gossiping like a fisherwoman. Hurry up!
Preacher cringed at the thought of being married to someone who sounded like an angry puma with a thorn in its paw.
Walter!
Get you a strap. Wear out a time or two.
Oh, I have given that some thought, sir. Believe me, I have.
Good luck.
Preacher walked back out into the street, his Henry cradled in his arms. A young man in a checkered shirt, with a bright red bandana tied about his neck and dark trousers tucked into polished boots, wearing two pearl-handled pistols, grinned at the mountain man.
Hey, Grandpa, ain't you too old to be walking around without someone to look after you? You're likely to forget your way back to the old folks' home.
Preacher glanced at the young would-be tough. Without slowing his stride, he drove the butt of his Henry right into the loudmouth's stomach. Preacher just paused long enough to pluck the young man's pistols from leather and drop them in a horse trough.
You run along home now, sonny. Tell your ma to change your diaper and tuck you into bed, because you appear to need some rest.
Preacher strode across the way to the saloon. He stepped in, allowed his eyes to adjust to the sudden gloom, then walked to the bar.
Give me a beer and a shot.
Town marshal entered and walked up to Preacher.
Trouble out there, old-timer?
Nothing I couldn't handle, young-timer.
He calls himself Kid Austin. He's been overdue for a come-down for some time. Thinks he's quite a hand with those fancy guns.
Yeah, well, he'll never make it. He's a lot of salty old boys riding the Hoot Owl Trail that'll feed them guns to him, an inch at a time.
Your preacher? Man who rides with the young gun Smoke?
Well, now,
don't talk. Just listen. The bounty's been up on your friend's head. That's the word I get. Someone up in Idaho territory is out to get Smoke.
Potter, Stratton, and Richards?
That's right. Potter is big, politically. Richards is in the mining and cattle. Stratton owns the town of Barry. Those two gunfighters on the porch, Felter and Canning, work for those three men. They got a bunch of hard cases camped just north of town. When you leave, and I hope it's soon, ride out easy and cover your tail.
Thanks.
No need for that. I just know what happened in the war, that's all. Can't abide a traitor. Since that first shooting back at the mining camp, the story's spread. I reckon all the way to the Idaho Territory. Oh, one more thing. Your friend has a sister named Jane, right?
He don't speak none of her.
Well, she's up in the territory now.
Oh, God. Let me guess. She's in Barry.
Yeah. She's Richard's woman. He keeps her.
Damn. All right. I'll tell him.
When Preacher rode out of Del Norte, he did so boldly, not wanting to implicate the shopkeeper, maybe leaving him open to rough treatment from Felter or Canning. The poor fella had enough woes to contend with from that brand wife of his. Preacher picked up his jars, secured him well, then rode out to the east. He didn't think he was fooling anybody. Felter did know him, and he knew he was friends with a young gunfighter. He would be followed. Preacher rode easy, constantly checking his back trail. He rode across the San Luis Valley, slowly edging north. No one alive knew Colorado like Preacher, and he was going to give those followers a rough ride. By noon of the second day, Preacher had spotted his trackers. He grinned nastily, then headed his horse toward the great sand dunes. If any of those behind him had any pilgrim in them at all, this is where Preacher would cut the sheep from the goats. Preacher skirted the southernmost part of San Luis Creek, filled up his canteens and watered his horses, and then headed for the dunes. On the east side of the lake, Preacher pulled into a stand of timber, carefully smoothed out his trail with brush and sand droppings, then slipped back and waited. He watched two men, neither of them Felter or Canning, lose his trail and begin to circle. Leaving his horses ground-reined, he worked his way to the edge of the timber until he was close enough to hear him talking.
Damned old coot! Where'd he go?
Relax. The boss has got 20 men working all around. We got him boxed. He can't get out.
Relax? Hell! I want that $5,000.
How much is on the old fart's head?
Nothing. It's the gunfighter Richards and them want.
That old man ain't worth a buffalo turd.
Oh, he'll take the old man alive, make him tell where the kid's at, then kill him.
How come all this interest in this smoke? I ain't never got the straight of it.
Personal way I heard it. The kid's sister is Richards' private woman up in Bury. I ain't never been there, so I can't say if she's a looker. Probably is. Then they's the gold. Seems the kid's brother was a Reb in the war on a patrol bringing gold in for the South. Richards and them others killed the Rebs and took the gold, about $100,000 or so of it. About 3-4 years back, the kid's daddy comes a-busting into Bury, for it was a town proper, and killed some of Richards' men. Took back some of the gold, about 40,000 of it, so I heard, but some of it was dust that had been recently washed. Richards thinks the kid has it, wants it back, and the kid dead.
Preacher jacked back the hammer of his Henry. Call me an old farting buffalo turd, will ya? Just south of the small settlement called Creststone, Preacher headed west across the valley, undercutting another settlement between the San Luis and the Sawatch Creeks. He was out of supplies when he reached Sawatch. Picketing his pack animals just outside of town, he rode on in, just in time for a hanging. In the early 1870s, almost every third building in the town was a saloon, and it was a rough and rowdy place. Preacher rode to a general store and got his supplies.
Hey, Keith, who's getting the necktie party?
Some tin-horn gambler named Anderson. Killed a man last night during a card game. Fella caught him cold-decking and braced him. Gambler had one of them little belly guns. Had the trial this morning. Judge and jury and all. Lasted 40 minutes. Jury deliberated for 5 minutes. You want to come watch him swing?
Oh, thanks, but I best be traveling. Heading east.
Best be glad you ain't heading west. Lots of hard cases that-a-way. Looking for that outlaw gunfighter and murderer, Smoke Jensen. Got $6,000 on his head, and the ante's going up.
I'm too over that kind of nonsense. I leave the hard riding and the gun smoke to the young bucks.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Outside of town, Preacher swung wide and headed west, into the Cochetopa Hills, then south into the wilderness. Then he angled southwest, straight through some of the wildest and most beautiful country in the world. Days later, in the Needle Mountains, he felt he was being watched as he rode. But he figured it was just Injuns. And Injuns didn't worry him, since most of them thought him to be crazy. The slug that almost tore him from the saddle hit him in the left shoulder and drove out his back. The Preacher slammed his heels to his pony's side.
Get him alive! Don't kill him!
But getting Preacher took more doing than the men chasing him had. This slug hit Preacher in the leg, deflecting off his leg bone and angling upward, ripping a hole when it exited out of his hip, taking a piece of bone with it. Savagely reining his pony, Preacher leveled his Henry. He took out 3 men, then slipped away, putting a hole where he could tend to his wounds. He was losing a lot of blood. He rode hard, barely able to see, barely able to hang on to his saddle horn. The pack animals trotted along, keeping pace, frightened. Finally, in desperation, he tied himself in the saddle. All through the afternoon, he rode, half conscious, until he reached a small lake just west of the animals. There, he slid to the ground, dragging his bad leg. In a fog of pain, the Preacher loosened the saddle cinch, allowing air to flow between saddle and hide. What he didn't need right now was a galled-up horse, but he was fearful of removing the saddle. He didn't know if he'd have the strength to swing it back on the pony. He collapsed to the earth. All through the cold night, Preacher dreamed of his Injun wives and his kids as his wounds festered and infected, fevering him. Their images were blurred, and he could not make out their faces. He dreamed of the mountains and the valleys as they were when he first saw them almost 60 years ago, lush and green and wild and beautiful. And he dreamed of his compadres, those men who, with Preacher, blazed the trails and danced and sang and whooped and hollered at the rendezvous, back when he and they were full of piss and vinegar and fire. But most of them were now dead. He dreamed of the battles he'd had, both with white and red men. And he wondered if his life, just like the way of life of the red man, was ending. When the chill of dawn touched him with her misty hand, Preacher knew he was close to death.
I gotta get the smoke. I gotta get to my boy.
And he knew his feelings toward the tall young man were just as parental as if he were his own flesh and blood. And he knew he loved the young man with the dark brooding eyes and the cat-quick guns. Dragging himself to the lake, he washed his wounds and bound them, the sight of them sickening him. He had been hit much harder than this before, but that was years back, when he was younger and stronger. He knew he should prepare poultices for his wounds, but he didn't know if he had the strength. And more importantly, he didn't know if he had the time. Preacher dragged himself to his pony and tightened the cinch and swung him to the saddle.
I'm 70 years old. I lived past my time. I turned into a babbling old fool. Oh, Jesus. Maybe I'm touched in the head. But I gotta warn my boy that he's coming. And I gotta cover my tracks better than any engine.
Having said that, he touched his heels to the pony's side and moved out, gritting his stubs of teeth against the waves of pain that ripped through him. Modern-day doctors would have said what the old man did was impossible for a man half his age. But modern-day doctors do not know and will never know the likes of the mountain men who cut the trails of the way west. A chill was in the morning air when Preacher rode up to the cabin on the knoll in the valley. He was a gaunt shell of the man who had ridden out in the middle of the summer. Through sheer iron will, stubbornness, and hard-headed cantankerousness, he had brought the pack animals home.
Hey, Nicole, you pretty thing, you. I brung you your old cannon jugs.
Preacher!
Preacher fell from his pony and into the arms of Smoke. They tended to his wounds as best they could, for his leg had become infected, and it was swollen and grotesque.
I think he's dying, Smoke.
Bend down here, son. I got something to tell you. And don't argue with me, because I ain't got no time for no debate.
Smoke squatted beside the bed.
I covered my back trail, so you'll be safe for a time.
Slowly, and with much pausing for breath, Preacher told Smoke and Nicole what he knew, and about the gold in the bottom of his father's grave at the hole.
Smoke, when your woman births to the baby, wait till spring and get the hell out of this country. Find yourself a safe place to live out your lives. Right now, I want you to get my fancy buckskins out of that there trunk over in the corner. Then leave me be for a while, huh?
Later, out on the porch, Nicole came up to Smoke with tears in her eyes.
What is he gonna do?
Get all dressed up in his fancy buckskins and sash and such, prepare himself to die, mountain man style.
I don't know why he's doing this.
He's doing it because he's a mountain man. I gotta do something.
Smoke rose and walked to the lean-to. He selected a gentle horse, a mare, too old for breeding. He saddled her and took her back to the cabin. Preacher was waiting with Nicole on the porch. Preacher's eyes touched on the horse, then returned to look at Smoke.
I expect you didn't forget everything I learned you.
No, sir, Preacher. What is your Christian name?
Arthur. Arthur was my first name. Why?
Because if we have a son, I want to name him after you.
Well, now that'd be right nice. Why don't you help me on that nag yonder and just stand back, huh?
Preacher was dressed in clean, beaded buckskins, his dying suit. He wore new leggings and moccasins and a wide red sash around his waist. And he had a cap of skunk hide and hair on his head.
You look grand.
You lying like a damn dog.
Once in the saddle, Preacher looked down at Smoke.
You know I'm gonna shoot this horse, don't you, son?
Smoke nodded.
I I don't understand.
It's so I can have something to ride when my human body's gone, girl. So don't you fret and carry on. Just one old life ending and you carrying the new life. That's the way of the world. Now be mindful of what I learned you, boy. You hear?
Yes, sir.
Preacher rode off without looking back, riding toward the high, far mountains. There, he would select his place to die. He would go out of this world as he had lived in it, alone.
You know what? I never even knew his last name.
Autumn touched the valley under the shadows of the great mountains, painting the landscape with a multicolored brush. The grass a deep tan, the trees golden, the sky blue, and the flowers white and purple and red. On a huge rock by the banks of the creek, Smoke chipped Preacher's name, the year, and his approximate age. The course of the creek has long shifted. The bed now part of grazing land, but the huge rock remains. And far in the mountains, high above the West Dolores, time and wind may have scattered the bones of man and horse, but some locals say that in early fall, on a clear night, if one listens with ears and heart, you can hear the sounds of a slow-moving old mare carrying a grizzled old mountain man. The old man completes his circle, then dismounts to rest for another year, his eyes on a valley far off in the distance. Now, of course, that's just a myth, a local legend, folklore. Certainly ain't real. But in the 1930s, when the CCC boys were working in the valley, tried to move the huge boulder with four names chipped deep into it, but something frightened them so bad none of them would ever again go near the boulder. Work was halted at the site. Of course, some say Preacher didn't die of his wounds, but lay near death in an Indian village for months while one of his daughters took care of him. Some say the old man returned to help the man called Smoke in his vendetta. Hell of a lot of people insist that that's the way it happened. But that's another story. As the winds change from cool to cold and the first flakes of snow touch the valley, Nicole gave birth to a baby boy. Nicole's hair was stuck to her head from sweaty, painful exertion, and her face was pale.
Smoke, take the knife and cut the cord where I show you.
Smoke's hand trembled and he hesitated for a second.
Do it, Smoke!
The umbilical lifeline severed, the baby washed, the tiny wound on his belly bandaged. Nicole wrapped the boy in clean white cloths, and the baby nursed at his mother's breast.
You look like you're gonna be sick, Smoke.
No.
Fact is, Smoke thought he had never seen a more beautiful sight. He stood in speechless awe, fed, warm, and secure. The child soon slept beside its mother.
You sleep too. I'll stand watch.
If baby Arthur starts to cry, just take him.
What am I supposed to do with it?
It'll come natural to you. Just keep your hand under his head for support.
Oh, Lord.
Nicole drifted off into sleep, and after an hour, the child awakened. With much trepidation, the young man took his son in his big, work-hardened hands and held it gently.
Now what do I do?
The baby looked up at Smoke.
Arthur, you behave now.
And that baby, just like his namesake, promptly started into bitching and grousing. Winter locked in the valley. And Smoke knew as long as the hard winter held, the three of them would be safe from the stalled pursuit of the bounty hunters. But in the spring, their coming would be inevitable and relentless. Smoke would have to move his family to a safer place. But where? His smile turned grim. Sure, why not? Right under their noses would be the last place they would look. Idaho. He'd have to hang up his 36, maybe get a new Remington or Colt, and carry just one gun. Use 7 for breeding, never for riding. Maybe, he thought, maybe we can pull it off. Preacher drifted into his mind then. God, how we miss that ornery old man, so full of common sense and mountain wisdom. He would have been a great companion for the baby. Smoke shook his head. Preacher was gone, and the living have to go on living. Preacher had told him that. He struggled to remember what Preacher had told him about Idaho Territory. He recalled Preacher telling him there was a lake on the eastern pan. It was so wild and beautiful and lonely it had to be seen to be believed. No white men lived there, Preacher said. So that's where Smoke would take his family to live, hopefully in peace. Baby Arthur cooed and gurgled and grew healthy and strong and much loved during the winter of 1871-72. He was big-boned and strong, with blonde hair and blue eyes that flashed when he grew angry. The three of them waited out the winter, making plans to leave the valley in late spring when the baby was 6 months old and they felt he could stand the trip. They both agreed it would be taking a chance, but it was one they had to take. Meanwhile, in a settlement that would soon wear the name of Telluride, in the primitive area of the Uncompahgre Forest, bounty hunters also waited for spring. They were a surly, quarrelsome bunch as the cold days and bitter nights drifted toward spring. With them was a young man who called himself Kid Austin. Kid was quick with a pistol, perhaps the quickest of them all, but the only man he'd ever killed was a drunken old Mexican sheep herder. Even with the knowledge that the kid was untested, the bounty hunters left him alone, for he was uncommonly fast and quick-tempered. And because the man they hunted was a friend of the old mountain man who had humiliated the kid in front of that saloon, Kid Austin hated the man called Smoke. He dreamed of killing this Smoke, of facing him down in a street, beating him to the draw, and watching him die hard in the dirt, crying and begging for mercy, while men stood on the boardwalks and feared him, and women stood and wanted him. Felter was a patient man who shared none of the kid's dreams. Felter didn't know how many white men he'd killed. He thought it must be around 25, and nobody gave a damn how many Injuns. He slowly spun the cylinder of his Colt.
They gotta be in that valley, southwest of the San Juans. Everything points in that direction.
That old you we talked to, he said something about a blonde-haired woman called Little Lightning. That could be Smoke's woman. You boys can have the gunfighter. I'll take me a taste of his wife. I like to hunt me a yellow-haired white woman. Man gets tired of them greasy squaws.
You rape all the squaws you take a mind to, Cannon. Don't nobody give a damn about them, but you bother a white woman, you go find yourself hung.
Not even I don't leave her alive to talk about it, I won't, Grissom.
That there's a thought to think about. But that ute said she's all swole up with Kid, getting ready to turn fresh.
So?
What about the kid?
Oh, I remember the time up in North Colorado when we hit an Indian camp. Surprised them. That were fun. After we had our fun with some young squaws, I found me a papoose just a-hollering and grabbed him up by the heels. Swung him again a tree. Head popped like a pistol shot.
Well, goddamn, that were just an Injun kid. This here's a white baby.
No, never mind. Richard said to kill them all. Don't want to leave no youngin' around to grow up and get mean.
The bounty hunters all agreed that that made sense. And, of course, they would pleasure themselves with the woman and then kill her, too.
I want Smoke.
The older bounty hunter smiled.
I want him face on so as I can beat him in his own game. You all just watch me.
Yeah, kid. You're real grizzly, you are.
I just need one chance, Poker. Just one.
The first week in April, a violently pre-season thunderstorm, spawned by a week of abnormally warm weather, struck the valley, scattering the herd of breeding horses.
I gotta get some of them back. We gotta have them for breeding stock. But I hate to leave you and Little Preacher alone.
We have to get that cow back for milk, and there is no telling where that fool cow ran off to. And don't forget, I'm a pretty good shot.
I might be gone for several days.
Honey, it was the hand of Providence that brought us that cow. Lord knows how it got out here, but you've got to get it back for the baby.
Nicole pressed a packet of food on Smoke.
Now I'll be packing while you're finding the herd and the cow. You always look so serious when you're milking.
Never did like milking.
Smoke left reluctantly, knowing he had no other choice. As he rode away on 7, he stopped once, turning in the saddle, looking back at his wife, who was holding their son in her arms. The sun sparkled off her hair, casting a halo of light around the woman and the baby. Smoke lifted a hand in goodbye. Nicole waved at him, then turned and walked back into the cabin. To the northeast, still many hard miles away, just leaving the last fringes of heavy forest and tall mountains behind them, rode the bounty hunters. Since the middle of March, they had fanned out in the mountains, asking questions of any white man and several friendly Indians. The Indians told them nothing, but several white drifters told them of a cabin in the valley, on a knoll with a little creek running behind it, where the Dolores leave the San Juans, head southwest. Well, you can't miss it. Canning's thoughts were of the yellow-haired woman. Felter thought about the money. Kid Austin thought of being the man who killed the gunfighter outlaw Smoke. What a name he'd have after that. And all the women he wanted. Smoke worked long hours, gathering his precious herd of Mustangs in Appaloosa, tucking them into a blind canyon, holding them there while he searched for the others. He found the cow and the old brindle steer that had wandered up with her. Probably, Smoke concluded, the only survivor of an engine attack on a wagon train. During the late afternoon of the second day out, Smoke thought he heard the faint sounds of gunfire carrying on the wind, blowing from the north, but he couldn't be certain. He listened intently for several moments. He could hear nothing except the winds, sighing lonely off the far mountains. So he returned to his work.
Fine-looking woman.
Nicole was sprawled on the floor. Canning's eyes lingered on her legs, where her dress had slid up when she was knocked down. The bodice of her dress was ripped open, exposing her breasts. Canning licked his lips. The bounty hunters had destroyed the interior of the cabin, looking for gold that wasn't there. One bounty hunter sat in a chair now, bandaging a bloody arm.
She can shoot. Damn near tore my arm off. Somebody seeing if you can find a bottle of laudanum.
Felter's eyes found the body of Stoner lying in front of the cabin.
Yeah, she sure can shoot. Just ask Stoner. Drag his body out of sight. Don't want to spook this Smoke when he rides up. And hide your horses. We'll take him when he comes in.
Now wait a damn minute. I'm gonna kill...
Shut up, Austin. Maybe you'll get a crack at him, maybe not. I'd like to take him alive, torture him, find out where the gold is.
Felter knelt down beside Nicole.
And shut that kid up before I shoot the little snot.
Cannon picked up a blanket and walked to the cradle. He folded the wool and held it over the baby's face.
Let's go, girlie.
Felter pulled Nicole up, stripped her naked, and shoved her into the bedroom. Her hands were tied to the bedposts. Through a mist of tears, Nicole watched Canning drop his trousers to the floor.
No! No!
On the morning of the third day out, Smoke Jensen pushed his horses closer to the cabin, a feeling of dread building within him. Some primitive sense of warning caused him to pull up short. He left the cow, the steer, and the horses in a meadow several miles from the cabin. He made a wide circle of the cabin, staying in the timber back of the creek. Then he began slipping up to it. Nicole was dead. The acts of the men had grown perverted, and in their haste, her throat had been crushed. Now, as Felter sat by the lean-to outside and watched the valley in front of him, wondering where Smoke had hidden the gold, Inside, Canning scalped Nicole with his skinning knife and tied her bloody hair to his belt. Then he began skinning a breast, thinking he would tan the hide and make himself a nice tobacco pouch.
Oh, God damn, Cannon!
Kid Austin lurched out the back door.
Kids gotta learn. Hey, want a tobacco pouch? Got another titty left.
No thanks. I'm gonna go talk to Felter.
Grissom went out the front door of the cabin. As he walked over to the lean-to, he studied Smoke's tracks. They indicated he had ridden off south, so he would probably return from that direction. But Grissom sensed something was wrong, his years on the Hoot Owl back trail surfacing.
Felter?
Yeah?
Something ain't right.
I feel it too. But what?
I don't know.
Grissom spun as he heard movement behind him. His right hand dipped for his pistol. Felter stepped back into the lean-to. Grissom's palm touched the smooth wooden butt of his pistol as his eyes took in the tall young man standing by the corner of the cabin, a Colt 36 in each hand.
It's Smoke!
Smoke leapt off the porch and ran towards the back of the small cabin. Felter scurried from the lean-to, his fist full of Colts.
He's behind the house!
He slid to a halt and raced back to the water trough, diving behind its protection. Kid Austin, caught in the open behind the cabin, ran for the banks of the creek, panic driving his legs. He leaped for the protection of the sandy embankment, twisting in the air. The ball hit Austin's right buttock and traveled through the left cheek of his butt, tearing out a sizable hunk of flesh. He passed out, overwhelmed by the pain in his ass. Smoke ran for the woodpile and crouched there, recharging his Colt and checking the .44s. Smoke flicked away sweat from his face. He waited. Suddenly, something came sailing out the back door. Smoke felt hot bile build in his stomach. Someone had thrown his baby son outside. The boy had been dead for some time. Smoke fought back sickness.
You want to see what's left of your woman? I got her hair on my belt and a piece of her hide to tan. We all took a turn or two with her. I think she liked it.
Rage charged through Smoke, but he remained still, crouched behind the thick pile of wood. He willed that rage to cool to controlled, venom-filled fury. He unslung the Big Sharp's buffalo rifle that Preacher had carried for years. The rifle could drop a 2,000-pound buffalo at 600 yards. It could also punch a hole through a small log. Preacher's training kept Smoke cautious. To his rear lay a meadow, void of cover. To his left was a shed, but he knew that was empty, for it was still barred from the outside. The man he'd plugged in the butt was to his right. Several fallen logs would protect him from that direction. Through a chink in the logs, Smoke shoved the muzzle of the Sharps and lined up where he thought he had seen a man move, just to the left of the rear window, where Smoke had framed it out with rough pine planking.
Ah! My arm! I said he blew off my arm! Ah!
Evans! Ah! Oh, shit! Ah!
Cannon ran out the front door of the cabin to the lean-to. He slid down hard behind the water trough.
This ain't working out, Felter. Grissom, Austin, and now Evans is either dead or dying. The slug from that buffalo gun blowed Evans' arm off. Let's get the hell out of here.
What about Clark and Sam?
They grown men. They can join us or they can go to hell.
All right, let's ride. We'll hide up in them mountains, see which way he rides out, then bushwhack him. Let's go.
Felter and Canning raced for their horses, hidden in a bend of the creek behind the bank. They kept the cabin between themselves and Smoke as much as possible and bellied down in the meadow the rest of the way. In the creek, a revived Kid Austin crawled upstream, the water red from the wounds in his butt. His Colts were forgotten. They were useless anyway. The powder was wet. All he wanted was to get away. That left the bounty hunters, Clark and Sam, in the cabin.
I'm not fighting. I'm getting out. That ain't no goddamn pilgrim out there.
Oh, the hell with that, Sam. I humped this woman, and I'll kill him and take the 8,000.
Well, that's your damn choice.
Sam raced out the front.
Hey, Jensen! Jensen! Your wife don't look so good now. Not since she got a haircut and one titty-skinned!
Outside, the air stank of black powder and blood. Smoke had seen the men ride off into the foothills. He wondered how many were left in the cabin. He remained still, his eyes blazing with fury. He stared at the stiffening form of his son. Inside the cabin, if Clark could have read the man's thoughts, he would have stuck the muzzle of his .44 into his mouth and pulled the trigger. Leaving the sharps in place, smoke eased slowly backward, keeping the wood pile in front of him. He slipped down the side of the knoll and ran around to the side of the small hill, then up it to the side of the cabin. The bounty hunter inside was still watching the wood pile, looking at the muzzle of the sharp stuck through the logs. Smoke eased around to the front of the cabin and looked in. He saw Nicole, saw the torture marks on her, saw the hideousness of the scalping and the skinning knife. He lifted his eyes to the back door where Clark was crouching just to the right of it. Smoke raised his .36. Smoke shot the pistol out of Clark's hand, taking the hand with him. Smoke stepped over Grissom's body. Clark looked up at the tall young man with the burning eyes. Cold fear put a bony hand on his shoulder. For the first time in his evil life, Clark knew what death looked like.
You're gonna make it quick, ain't you?
Not likely.
When Clark came to, he was naked, staked out a mile from the cabin on the plain. Rawhide held his wrists and ankles to thick stakes driven into the ground. A huge ant mound was just inches from him, and smoke had poured honey all over him.
I don't deserve this. It was Canning that raped your wife first, and it was Canning that scalped her and skinned her breast to make a tobacco pouch with the tanned hide. Jensen, it wasn't me. You hear me? Oh, God. Oh, Jesus, please. I'm a white man. You can't do this to me. What are you, half Apache?
I'm guessing you're not going to die well.
Smoke mounted 7.
God damn you! Shoot me, for God's sake! It'll take me days to die out here like this! You're devil, Jensen! You're the devil!
The ants found Clark.
Oh, God, no! No! No!
Smoke rode back to the cabin across the plain. It was lovely, a profusion of wildflowers. Nicole had loved the wildflowers. She'd often picked a bunch of them to brighten a shelf or a table. By a cabin on the knoll, Smoke found a shovel and began his slow digging of graves, one smaller than the other. Seven would warn him if anybody approached. He paused often to wipe the tears from his eyes. Smoke covered the mounds of earth with armloads of wildflowers from the meadow.
God, I know you'll take this mother and son into your place of peace and love and beauty. I also know what the good book says. Vengeance is mine, saith the Lord. But with all due respect, I gotta say no, sir, Lord. Not this time.